Hot route! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot route!
I don't. What is hot route?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you gonna get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball. I
hope he didn't kill somebody.
When we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle key popping that water bag. Y'all jacking. It's a party. It's a party. It's a party.
Happy New Year. It's 11 personnel. I'm Nick Roush. He's Adam Luckett. And the Kentucky Wildcats are bowl champions of the world.
8 wins.
Man, that feels good.
8-5 is a lot better than 7-6.
How many times have we been able to say 8-5? I guess it was the Woodson year with
06, 07.
Yeah. And
last year.
That's it.
18,
in our
19.
Lives.
Yeah, it is.
3 times. I guess the previous would have been the 80s. And I think one of those years, the Hall of Fame, one year they won
9 games, I think.
Yeah, they beat Wisconsin that year.
I think they went 9-3.
How weird. It's so unforeseen that you would play the same team in the same bowl game in consecutive years. It never happened nowadays. They play Wisconsin back-to-back years in the Hall of Fame game. 83 and 84. Or 84 and 85, one of those two.
I think it happens more than you think. Wisconsin played Miami 2 years in a row. The year Miami was in the Orange Bowl.
Not in the same bowl game, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's even weirder about it. It was we're just going to do this whole thing all over again, which I guess now is the part of the podcast where it's in memoriam for bowl season. It's pretty sad to see it go, Adam Luckett.
I enjoyed this bowl season an awful lot.
Yeah, the only thing that was a real bummer, so the calendar year was great, giving us 2 bye weeks throughout the season, really spaced things out. But it really crunched up the bowl calendar. There was a couple Saturdays that had like I think that first game that had the Vegas Bowl, there was like 6 games that Saturday instead of spreading the wealth a little bit more and giving us more stuff like the Independence Bowl, like we were recording last time, or just, you know, some kind of hijinks.
Well, since what happened was the national championship or national semifinals were supposed to be on New Year's Eve, like when they sold this to the media people,
yeah,
or television stations. Said it was going to be on New Year's Eve, and then they were going to have a little break, and then the championship was going to be on the 13th. What happens was they got blasted
for
putting it on New Year's Eve, so they moved it up to
ratings
the 28th.
Were horrible.
But they didn't, because it was already set in stone for that Monday in New Orleans, they didn't want to change the date. So what that happened, that extended it by the bowl season by like an extra week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you saw the Gator Bowl being on January 2nd. You saw Louisiana and Miami, Ohio play last night, Monday night.
Which that ended hilariously as
well.
Yes,
it did.
Man, I think the most underrated part about bowl season is just the stupidity that just happened. You get Mike Glass, like, punching somebody in the face, you know. You get snapping over a dude's
Miami
head.
Miami getting shut out by Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, just the dumb absurdity.
In this sport, we don't ever really get a period like that. Like, in college basketball, you get those preseason tournaments where things get weird. Like, Michigan looks like a number one team this year, and now look at them. They just got housed by Michigan State.
You get Dayton and Kansas going into overtime,
in
the Maui final.
Right. But in college football, you don't really get that until after the season, until bowl season, where things get a little wacky because you have a month off after the season's over. You're going to some sometimes cool place, a lot of times not cool place, to hang out for a week and play – team that you don't have much familiarity with. So things can get weird, things can get sideways, and we saw some things get really sideways. We saw the Eastern Michigan kid, Mike Glass, punch Pittsburgh, you know, like we just mentioned. We saw Miami get shut out.
The triple option versus Air Raid wasn't as fun as I hoped it would be. Just because the triple option.
They got in a lead early and just...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
As soon as Washington State fumbled on that first possession, you're like, well...
Yeah, here we go.
Here we go.
Which, man, the other triple option, I just picked the wrong triple option team for excitement, and that was the Navy game that happened right after the Belk Bowl, which I was...
See, I'd have missed that.
See, and I was busy blogging away, and the wife's texting me like, oh, my gosh, you will not believe Navy how Navy just won that game. And, you know, I'm just like, okay, they won on a last-second field goal. Cool. Well... Not until I get a couple bourbons in me afterward, I'm sitting at the hotel bar, and I'm like, they won on a halfback pass on fourth down with 20 seconds ago. We got 40. Like, what in the wide world of sports is going on here?
I know.
That was insane. I think the big takeaways are that we can just banish the Pac-12 and most of the ACC from being able to play competitive sports. Pac-12 soft. Iowa just took it to USC. Utah. How? Okay. That guy, I always forget his name. The head coach. Don't even say it. I'm not going to learn it. Just out of spite. Because you haven't earned the right. Every big game the Utes get, they just blow it. They're like finally like, oh, we've done enough for people to actually care about us on the national stage. Well, you know what? I'm never going to care about you, Utes. What's a Ute? Did you just say Utes? Yeah, what are two Utes? Oh, my cousin Vinny.
That's, yeah. It's 2 years in a row where they lost in the Pac-12 championship and then come back and lay a dud. Last year was, I remember this because it was a New Year's Eve in Orlando. Had a little action on that Northwestern money line, and Northwestern beat them out in the Holiday Bowl, so that was nice. And then this year, Tom Herman as a dog. In the state of Texas.
Oh, man.
It just, that was a tough spot for Utah. I had a hard time seeing them win those games. But for me, there was a lot of shootouts, I think. You saw a lot of points. In the Orange Bowl, Florida, Virginia gave us an exciting game.
Man, Bryce Harris. That's
Bryce Perkins.
Perkins, sorry. Yeah. He's fun.
Yes.
And I was watching that. It was kind of bizarre. I couldn't tell if Virginia Tech fans, like, I think they were kind of cheering for Virginia, but I wasn't sure. It was right after the Belk Bowl prep rally, and we're eating at a establishment. Favorite place, I went there twice. I liked it so much. Duckworth in Charlotte. They had just awesome sauce. The Carolina, and I love honey mustard kind of stuff. Their Carolina mustard sauce.
Mustard base, yeah.
Bomb.com. Absolutely love that stuff. One night I had the pork and the wings, and the other night I just had wings. So very good, but I was there watching that game, and there were people cheering for Virginia, and I was like, if that's Virginia Tech fans, then they're just – something's wrong with them. Because, like, you wouldn't catch Kentucky fans dead cheering for Louisville in a bowl game.
Right.
Like.
Could be that SEC hate.
But, like, who would. All right, so here's my question. You had a mucket. Who would Louisville have to play for you to cheer for them in a bowl game?
No one.
I have an answer. I actually have one.
What's that?
Florida. In the Sugar Bowl.
Florida.
I was cheering for Louisville. Some of it was because a guy I grew up with was their punter, Ryan Johnson. He was my high school quarterback. Only play he gets in, they down it at the one. I was freaking pumped for him. He's got Sugar Bowl rings. Really cool. But, man, I hated Florida way more in Will Muschamp. That was the Will Muschamp team that went like, what did they go, 11-2?
I think they were 11-1. Yeah, 11-2 after
they lost. Yeah, because they lost the SEC championship game. They go to Sugar Bowl and then play the.
Well, they lost to Georgia. That was a play-in game. The cocktail party that year.
Really?
Georgia went and they had smoked by LSU that year.
Okay.
And then LSU got.
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking out. They just lost in the. So, yeah, but still, they freaking Will Muschamp. Oh, I don't like him.
Still holding in there.
Our boy David Cornett, the shade he throws at Will Muschamp and Brad Crawford on Twitter. He had another good one on there today. Which, if y'all aren't following DA Cats 86, he's a fun football.
He gets follower. After him. That's for sure.
He really gets after him. Now, Belk Bowl. Adam Luckin, how was your viewing experience for the Belk Bowl?
In your life, you go through a lot of tough things, and I don't mean to make light of that, because there's probably a lot of you all that going through tough times right now. But having to view that from a cubicle was ultimate torture. It was one of the, probably the longest 3 hours of my life. And you have to, for me, it's not like I can just look at it. We don't have very good service in our building, so my cell phone service is shoddy. So I'm doing Google pretty much refresh on just to get the score and where you, people have the ball at.
So you couldn't even like hack into the company's Wi-Fi either and just like have it rolling. Do they have like site blockers?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was not fun. So my wife texted me updates. I could get, sometimes Twitter would work, sometimes it wouldn't.
Oh, God.
Got to take a lunch break, so I got to see like a good chunk of the second quarter. But other than that, I told my wife, I don't care. I will never, ever, ever do that again. Never. Not for $1 million.
And
so I got to miss one of the most exciting games
in
recent memory.
That's really the big, like, you have my deepest sympathies, because I know you obviously went back and rewatched it, like, probably more than once, if I were having to guess. But that's like, that was the one conundrum with that game. Ideal if you don't have to work. But if you got to work on New Year's, like, it's right in the middle of the day.
It was the one game, it was the one bowl game I knew that if they played there, I probably.
Yeah, you weren't going to be able to go to.
Right.
You weren't going to be able to get off. So just kind of stuck. And I'm sure you were like many others who were stuck in this situation. And I just hate to say that it really was like. You can get some bowl games that are just, like that first Gator Bowl, that was kind of a stinker. Like, Kentucky fumbles first possession, Georgia Tech just triple options you to death.
Just like we said with Air Force, once they scored and went up, it was kind of over.
And now, Kentucky made a run in that game, but it just.
They never really had a chance, though, because they just couldn't stop the fullback dive.
Yeah, yeah. But this game was. Not only did it feel like a regular season game, it felt like a rivalry game.
Right.
I mean, from the pregame atmosphere to the noise in the stands to the fighting each other. I mean, it was as juiced up of a game as you could ask for a Belk Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, like, come on, you know, it's almost like you're going to the Dollar General Bowl or the Little Caesars. It's a step up, but you just think of the Jim McElwain commercials, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not as, but you couldn't have asked for a better atmosphere for a football game, Adam Luckett. It was incredible.
Well, there's some regionalness to it because the teams, I think, had played like 18 times before that meeting. Like when Claiborne was here, I think they played a lot.
Mm-hmm.
In Kentucky, I think they own the series now 12-6-1. So they've had some success against Virginia Tech. They beat, the last time they played was Frank Beamer's first team, and they beat them in Commonwealth Stadium. So I think there was that. I think, like, if you're asking me, I think Kentucky's scheduling is fine right now, but if they ever were to get another Power 5 team.
That'd be a fun one to get.
That'd be a fun home and home to have.
So, yeah, they played in 88, 87. Man, Frank Beamer was there in 80. He was there that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Against the Claiborne teams. Virginia Tech got a couple wins against them back in the day. But most of their games were in, like, the 70s.
Right. They played every year there for, like, about 7-8 years in a row.
Yeah.
That was when Virginia Tech was independent.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they, I think you only played 7 SEC games back then.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
So they had to.
Well, there wasn't as many. There was
like,
only
they play, like, back then, they played, like, a North Carolina, Cincinnati, Virginia Tech, a few other schools near to them. Penn State.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think there was a lot of interest in the pregame stuff.
Oh.
And then it led into First Take showing.
First Take with breaking news.
I know.
When was First Take ever breaking news?
I know.
And I love that we get their take. I read something today from Jason Kirk of SB Nation, and it was just the bullet points of Lynn Bowden's game and how it was just pure domination in, like, all facets of the game. And some of it was the, like, you know, depending on which lens you look through. But the dude is the last dude you ever want to talk trash to. And I don't know why. Like, I understand there's going to be scuffles at bowl games.
Especially at those events.
Yeah, it happens all the time. People are going to want to talk trash because you can't always have everything perfectly where they're separated and you're not going to interact with other ones going in and out. And in this case, when they were going in and out of the Speedway, dudes from Virginia Tech were like, oh, let's call out Bowden. Let's get under his skin. And it's, he's not the dude that you want to piss off.
Right.
As Mark Stoops said, if he's walking into a back alley, he's walking back out. The other guy ain't.
And I love that he got a police escort.
It was so
once
bad.
He put the full pads on.
And
the
for
field.
All of you folks who are high and mighty and holier than thou, and, oh, he shouldn't have played. There's no room in football for fighting. Well, you remember the last time Kentucky beat Florida? Not last year, but the time before that? Those dudes were throwing hands in the middle of the field. And nobody got kicked out. Everybody still played. Folks, this is football. This is a physical game. People get in fights. Happens all the time. And then you're like, why is he punching him if he's got a helmet on? Lynn Bowden, you would say he's a cerebral player because not only did he use his bare knuckles and actually hit somebody in the face, he put his dukes up and he did it before the refs showed up to penalize him.
Lynn Bowden took it a little too far. But if you're going to take it too far, that was the time frame to do it in before the officials get out there. And, you know, if he went out there and didn't play well or the offense stunk it up, rightfully, they would have taken a lot of backlash.
Yeah, yeah.
But he didn't.
But, see,
just like the Louisville-Kentucky fight 2 years ago,
yeah.
Lamar Jackson started that fight. But you don't hear anyone say that because he ran all over Kentucky that day. You hear Kentucky throwing trash cans and this and that, and exactly. That's all you hear from that game. But
well, and then the other fight that happened before the game at Papa John's, mm-hmm. 2 years before that, is Kentucky in that game if they aren't raising hell before? No, there's a certain aspect of playing with intensity because your guys are juiced up. And you could hear the hits in the stadium.
Right.
Because those dudes were jacked
up.
Yusuf
Porker was a heat-seeking missile.
Oh, my God. That targeting, that was the only time they called targeting because they assumed they were like, all right, one of these has to be.
Uh-huh.
But Zach Johnson's hit, mm-hmm. he just blew up.
That was a great hit.
Boogie Watson.
Yeah, he's going to be a problem next
year.
Oh,
man. He just... Whew.
But if that's the use of Corker Kentucky gets next year, you better watch out because he's going to light some dudes up. But my point on the whole thing is just there was a lot of stuff going on, and I can understand why people would be upset, this or that, but, you know, it's kind of football, and I think we're learning more about that type of stuff. Like, you know, I think some people maybe been upset about some of the language in the locker room after Jordan Wright's.
Yeah.
I know. That's just that's kind of what it is.
It's what you got to deal right. with when big time football. Is my, like, I know that you don't want to be the U and you love to, like, mm-hmm. bash the U for the chains on it. But, like, you need some of those kind of guys to be, you need some badasses.
Well, it's chip on a shoulder. I mean, Mark Stoops is building this where the first thing he said in the press conference is that we're not taking a back seat. You know, to nobody. And so you see that through his players. They're not going to get punked. They're the ones that want to do the punking.
I mean, how many times was the shoe on the other foot with this Kentucky team?
Right.
And now they're the ones who are bullying dudes.
Now, they got a damn guy named Bully who plays nose tackle.
From Detroit.
Right.
Some dudes from Detroit, from Youngstown, who Lonnie Johnson's from Gary. Like, some dudes who've seen some
right.
like, stuff. Who are out there now just bullying people. I absolutely love it because I'm a, like, the fact that Kentucky's winning with defensive football, I just love it. It's not like a bunch of smoke and mirrors.
I think looking back, we can all enjoy it, but I think we can say a couple things. One, Virginia Tech messed with the wrong guy.
Yes.
Two, Lynn Bowden probably went a little too far.
Yes.
And three, mm-hmm. when it came time to play football and after the refs, got, you knew that was coming. Those 15-yard penalties were coming early, and as soon as they called a hold on Stenberg, they did it. You knew both first possessions, they were going to be flags on both teams. But once they got through that, the team settled in and played an outstanding
played a clean
college football
game. Yeah. The boogie penalty, too, was complete BS, where you pushed them in, like, the collar, and they
right.
said it was a high hit. Like,
right.
come on, really? You're calling that?
But
they're going to call him
when you
early.
Do that. That's what you're asking for. You're going to get that every time from officials when you come out and when you do that. So you knew it was coming, but after that, there was a really good football game. You never saw a scuffle breakout or anything.
There was,
and then after the game, the teams were dapping each other up.
They got a little jolly after the Stenberg penalty that they didn't show on camera, where, you know, the refs, the Big 12 officials, by the way, took much longer. Like, for whatever reason, their protocols there aren't as quick as SEC's.
Uh-huh.
So how they would communicate, it took them forever. And during that play, when they're waiting to figure out all the penalties, because Virginia Tech had an unsportsmanlike on the back end that gave Kentucky the first down.
Offensive language or something like that.
The offensive language one. But that Kentucky, they were like staring each other down during that. I was like, oh God, nothing happened here. But nothing did happen. They use it. There's that fine line they talk about of going over. Stenberg would use it at SEC Media Days. I think sometimes he went over it. But in this game, like, hey, that was a weak sauce hold call. That was, you know. As he said after the game in the tweet, you know, they always got his number in mind.
he had an outstanding tweet about the
officials. That was, it was so good. He's like, you know what, I just appreciate them never being consistent on what they're going to call, but always keeping number 71 in their minds.
Right. That was outstanding.
The one thing that I think the fourth takeaway you missed from all the fighting, though, is Steve Klingscale's ability to multitask.
My man. I got to shout out Clint because he got me a little bump on Twitter because I said, my favorite part about all of this is that Klingscale is out here in the middle of it with a chicken finger, eating the chicken finger. And he said, oh, that was a PB&J. But yeah, that was
oh,
awesome.
Oh, man. I loved it. And then once the game started, like we said, there was a wide hit. What surprised you from the game? Like
the success Virginia Tech had running the ball on Kentucky.
Yeah.
That surprised me the most.
They got them on the edges. Like,
well, they did a good job keeping Kentucky off balance, mixing them up, getting out on the edges, but then hitting them with an inside run. They hit two inside runs. Like, McLeese's two big runs were just two inside runs.
And those Jets, like, they for all the talk that Bud Foster...
It's a lot of window dressing with their offense, and I think they did a really good job keeping Kentucky off balance.
Yeah, well, exactly. And, like, all the talk about Bud Foster, he was the least valuable player of the game, but when Bowden did whatever the hell he wanted. Meanwhile, Justin Fuente called a great game as far as knowing when to go tempo and when not to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's
6.6. They averaged 6.64 yards per carry in that game.
Yeah.
That was the biggest number of the Fuente era at Virginia Tech.
It was also the most Kentucky gave up all year. Mm-hmm. I think the next closest was like 4.4.
Right.
They really got Kentucky on their heels. And I was worried for a little – because you had seen Kentucky be able to counterpunch to keep in it, but you were wondering, like, how much can they keep up with? Because this offense isn't designed to put up a big number.
How they won the game was essentially winning the middle eight and scoring, and therefore owning the possession battle. Because Virginia Tech scored on 6 of 8 of their regular possessions. Kentucky only forced 2 punts. The 2 possessions outside of that were the ones just in the hurry-up drill. At the end of the first half, after a long scoring drive for Kentucky, and at the end of the fourth quarter, after a long scoring drive for Kentucky. So their ability to sustain it and have success in those situations were the reason I think they won the game. Because if Virginia Tech has the ball with 2 minutes left, 2:30, instead of, you know, just change there at the end, it might be a different story, especially with that kicker they have.
This is the part of the podcast where I want to remind everybody that stop panicking when teams are chewing up clock. Like, chewing up clock in late-game situations is good. It's a big part of two-minute football is making sure the other team doesn't get the ball. You saw it on NFL Sundays. It's a little bit different, I think, though. Like, I understand it more when Lynn Bowden's at quarterback.
Uh-huh.
But you got to chew up clock, and they played it.
On that drive, there was never really an issue, but the play before the touchdown pass, Lynn Bowden had kind of a scramble where he was able to get out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge play because if you don't get that and he maybe throws it or runs it, Kentucky has to waste their last time out.
Yeah,
and then you're just looking at
in the end zone.
Yeah, so getting that play was huge because you got out of bounds. Virginia Tech takes a timeout after that, so then Kentucky gets to kind of regroup And then you have, you're going to have the opportunity for three plays, and you're going to be able to run it at least on one of those plays.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a huge play in the game that not many people are talking about, because if that doesn't happen, I don't know if Kentucky can score right there.
Let's just stop what we're doing and just focus on that last drive, mm-hmm. because, tip your cap to Brad White's defense for getting a stop when they needed it.
Three and out.
That was huge. Mm-hmm. It was after the arm punt, I believe, that Bowden had.
Yes.
Which,
with field position, well, the arm punt was fine, but then they had a big return off of it. So Kentucky lost a big opportunity there, because I thought they were in good shape, because the offense flipped the field.
Yeah.
Get a punt, pin them inside the 15, get a stop, and then you're going to have good field position.
You don't have to go 60 yards.
Yeah, and you're going to have five-something minutes left to do that.
Yeah.
So they had to have a stop right there, so give the defense credit. When they had to get it, they got the stop.
They got that stop, and they forced the field goal on the A.J. Rose fumble that had, gave them a short field as well. Those were huge, huge stops by the defense when otherwise Fuente really had them on their heels with tempo all day, but the defense rose to the challenge when they needed and gave Bowden an opportunity to orchestrate that final drive. And I know you're currently working on a very detailed post on all of it, but first and foremost, that play on fourth down, not the fourth and one, I'm talking the fourth early. And seven.
Oh, yeah, that one. There's an early one, too, where it was fourth and one. Before you even get to that, Kentucky had only got one first down so far, so they're still on, like, the 40, they're on 30.
Something like that, yeah.
And they run a speed option, and Bowden has to just cut it up and plow forward and find a way to get a yard. So he does that.
It was very Tennessee-esque. In
right,
that
it was.
Virginia Tech played well. And by the way, they kept trying to run that dumbass option play to the nub side, and Virginia Tech was played it perfectly every single time. I don't know why Eddie kept running it. He was running it like they saw something on film that they liked, and Virginia Tech never bit on it. And I think that was the same thing that they did on that fourth down. Regardless, Bowden stuck his nose down, got the first down.
Mm-hmm.
But the big one, fourth and seven, and you're just that was probably the only time of that entire last drive that I was like, how the hell are they going to get this?
You right. Know?
And they had
– that was a tough spot.
When he started scrambling right, and I saw – I think it was Ashby. They had two dudes spying Bowden. Like, just don't let him scramble. Make him throw it.
Well, on the two big touchdown runs that Bowden had, they were both draws on third and long.
Yeah, because – oh, and you – especially from where we were sitting, the 61-yard one. I mean, you could see the Red Seas parting before. It was like there was nobody in the middle of the field.
And then on – Bowden's interception, I think, right opened up, and he could have.
I don't know what he was. Like. He just was looking. Moonwalk
for 20 yards.
Wagner.
Right.
But anyway, the fourth down with Ali, I saw both linebackers shifting right when he was trying to see what he could get out of that, and there was nothing there. And while the linebackers are following him from the inside, Ali is cutting in from the outside.
Right.
And the thing that makes sense, it would be a reasonable thing for a fan, just Joe Schmo, be like, well, why don't they roll out Bowden more for a run pass option? He can either run it and scramble, or he can throw it. The thing is, he's terrible at throwing on the run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has to really set his feet and get everything he has into it.
And he did this time though.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those where it was like, oh man, this has to be perfect, and it was a perfect throw. I mean, he really did thread the needle, and Ali made
a great catch. Best play of his career by far.
It was a hell of a catch, and you're just like, all right, well, they're winning this damn ball game now. Like,
right.
Nothing can stop them now.
It was a great performance for Josh Ali. I think he had five catches for 80 yards. One was a jet sweep where he got a chunk play, 20 yards.
I think he ran it twice, yeah.
That catch there to extend the drive, and then, of course, the catch at the end.
Mm-hmm.
A huge game for him, for a guy that's probably going to take Bowden's spot in the slot next year when Terry takes back over.
Mm-hmm.
So just a huge performance from him. And in that drive, they didn't get a chunk play. They only that 19-yard touchdown was the first play over 13 yards in that drive.
Really?
Yeah. It was just a grind it out, slowly but surely get down the field. And on Bud Foster Day. Now, Nick, you didn't see the broadcast.
Yeah, that
but Twitter I was letting you know. And the live blog was letting you know.
It was the Bud Bowl. By all, you know, all things
considered. I was calling it Bud Foster Day. Just Bud Foster Day. And, man, they kept showing him during that drive. And you could just see it on his face. He was like, God bless. They just got the best dude on the field.
Yeah. And what made it even more special is that, like, as much as they're emphasizing how great Bud Foster is, he had a month to get ready to stop one guy. And no matter what that guy did, he couldn't. Because Bowden had a counterpunch for every single thing that they did. Now,
with that offensive line, this offense is just tough to stop with a dynamic guy in Lynn Bowden that can do so many different things, and then with that offensive line, they are just hard to stop.
They're a meat grinder, a rolling ball of butcher knives. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Eddie Grant.
Right,
but
and Grant does a really good job of mixing stuff up, and all the wrinkles he's added in with that QB run game, I think, has been really impressive.
Those, especially like we mentioned earlier, those QB draws were right, I mean, just wide open.
They haven't really done that this year. The draws they had done were kind of quick. These were kind of more delayed.
Did you notice how much of like just Lynn standing and letting like in the backfield waiting for his guys to get there? It felt like it took longer than normal in this game, and I'm not sure exactly why. They worked a lot of the time, but I found myself being like, just go. Like,
I think against Virginia Tech, they're more of an aggressive defense. So they were probably trying to use some of that aggressiveness and some of those stunts against them.
Get out of their position.
Right.
Now, so the third and two, I actually missed watching this play because I got lost in the stadium trying to find my way to the field. So I missed third down when they had to call a timeout after Chris Rodriguez didn't get it. Fan of that call or no?
The Wildcat?
Yeah. With Rodriguez on third and two.
I thought it was smoke. Pretty sure it was smoke. I could be wrong.
Either way.
No, I didn't love it. I think at that point, you're just riding Bowden so much. I get he was probably tired, but I would have kept with him. Or at least used a traditional run game with him as a decoy.
Yeah. Just to like hold the defensive end.
And even in, especially in smoke, smoke and Rose both. I don't love them in those short yardage situations.
It was none other than it was smoke. You were correct.
So they had the wrong back in there, and then they don't use.
Why are they use Rodriguez?
And I think Stoops probably got. I think he got upset with Grant about that. I think that's what he was yelling about. Not for sure, but
that's probably what it was. But then Bowden gets it on fourth and one. Time's rolling. He, like you said, he gets out of bounds, and then you've got the play, and. While this is happening, I'm sitting on the sidelines. I got Big Blue Drew to my left. I got Mitch Barnhart to my right. And so when they got that first down on the fourth and short,
heavy hitters.
The thing that kills me about the Big 12 replay process is that they just refuse to spot the ball before they decide. Like, they just won't spot it until they decide if it's worth replaying or not.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Mitch is like, this is great. This is like a timeout. You know, like, you give chance for Lynn to rest. And he was right. Like, all right, you're going to wait to spot the ball. Let Lynn catch his breath. Then ends up paying off. He's able to get out of bounds. And then Lynn just – he plays hero ball. And hero ball has it often doesn't work unless you're as good as Lynn Bowden. But big-time players make big-time plays and big-time games. And, like, so many times before, he went over to Coach Stoops and said, let's do this. In Missouri, he said, put me in to return the punt. He returns the punt. He tells all the coaches for a week, hey, let me try quarterback. Look what happens. Now, he goes to the sideline. He says, let's throw it up to Mod. Let's do this. Stoops was quick in the press conference to be like, oh, no, we were going to do that all along. It's like, Mark, just prop up your boy. Let him take his credit. Because what happens is – Lynn knew what would happen if he stared down Ahmad. He knew that everybody, like, that was the time that you call the Wagner play, you call the fade. Before the play, he tells Ali, we're not doing double faith. We're going to do a post. He stares down Wagner. Everybody and their brother, they got the safety. That safety was basically guarding. I mean, they basically had Wagner doubled. There was nobody on that side of the field. And Wynn just gives him 1-2, floats it up there. Ali runs under it. Game, set, match. It's freaking awesome.
It was.
It was awesome. And like the crowd. Oh man, it was in the UK's end zone too.
Right.
Oh man.
It was perfect inning.
Mitch was losing his mind.
I bet.
It was great. It was absolutely perfect. And of course afterwards he's just y'all said I couldn't throw.
It was like I think Jeff Drummond said this. It was like a movie. Like a great movie, and then ends in a way you totally didn't see coming with throw to win the game.
Like, you knew that it was going to end a certain way.
Right.
But you didn't know how they were going to go about it.
Right.
It's like kind of like knowing that Anakin Skywalker is going to become Darth Vader, but you just don't know how, but you need to see it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, that was pretty cool. You know? Pretty cool.
Yeah. It was an outstanding bowl game. I think it was one of the best bowl games of this season, and I can't remember a more exciting bowl game UK has ever played in. Yeah. When they beat Clemson that first year with Rich Brooks, that was pretty exciting. But that was similar to the Penn State game where they got a big lead early.
Mm-hmm.
The other team kind of came back, and then they held them off in the end.
Right.
This one from the jump was back and forth, and Kentucky – with the way they've played, they're usually winning kind of these defensive slugfests,
mm-hmm.
you know, 17-13, whatnot. But this one was a shootout, and they had to win a shootout. And I think for this program to move forward and to keep evolving and keep climbing the ladder, they're going to have to win games like this. And we saw a few years ago, 14, they lost a game like this, 44-40 to Louisville. But then we also saw them in Lamar Jackson beat them in a shootout.
Mm-hmm.
And in Mississippi State that year beat them in a shootout. But the last couple of years, that just hadn't been in the cards.
Right.
But this year, or to see that with a team that's going to return in a lot of people, I think that can be a good building block. Even though Bolden is 95% responsible for a lot of it, being in that type of game and winning that type of game, I think can be good for the team.
Well, and to have the mental fortitude to, like, you know, we're going to win this game. And I think that's what, especially, like I said on that final drive, the only time I was really worried and I wasn't confident that Kentucky had the stuff to go down there and win it was that fourth and long when you're just like.
Yeah, fourth and seven, yeah, and it feels like a mile in this offense.
Exactly. But I think some fans might have even on the second turnover, when Kentucky had two straight turnovers, I think there was some fans who were like, oh, God, we're going to give up 30. There's not enough time to come back.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that after seeing Kentucky win games like this, just over and over, over the last 2-3 years in the Mark Stoops era, really since Grant got here, the last 4 years, because that's been the most successful part of this run, the psyche is just completely different. It just is. You know, instead of like, well, here we go, it's like, here we go, let's do this. It's different. Yeah, and you see the confidence in the players, you see it in the coaches, and it's so much more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it also makes it to where you're able to overcome adversity. And my number one guy for that in this game was Brandon Echols. Because our boy, he's been probably the most consistent DB this year.
He got picked on a little bit.
Yeah,
even that last three and out, that was his guy, and he was open, and he just dropped it.
And that fade, they talked about going to this game, 50-50 balls, 50-50 balls. He didn't even turn his head, you know. And it's like, dude, where you at? The next drive, they run the jet sweep right at him. He can't shed his blocker. Like, it was some very
right.
Like,
you missed the tackle on another big run.
It's like, are you okay, dude? Like, what's something going on? And Bowden said he went up to him after the game and was like, you know, people get paid millions of dollars to get beat. Like, you're good. So what does he do that last play?
Yeah, it was good for him to see him end it that way.
Dude, Fuente, that's a hell of a play they had drawn up. Like, mm-hmm. to be able to have, I think it was three laterals before they got it back to Hooker. And then, because what it does, it just draws everybody in. Luckily, you had somebody with the presence of mind like Echols to kind of slowly track, pounce, and then hit Hooker. If Brandon Echols doesn't, if he messes around and doesn't just smack Hooker, force the fumble, and Wright picks up and score, there are four or five lead blockers and
on the other side,
a Virginia Tech wide receiver just waiting for the ball on the other side from a pass from his quarterback. Like that was a very well-designed play. But Echols, he stayed engaged. He stayed involved in the game. And like you know how DBs are. They're a cocky bunch. It would have been easy. Yeah. It would have been very easy for him to just...
No rear-view mirror. You can't have a rear-view mirror
and
playing
he didn't.
That position.
And I'm just, you know, that's one of those where you tip your cap to him, you tip your cap to Cash.
Yeah, great. This best game since Florida.
You tip your cap to A.J. Rose.
Yeah. It was good to see Rose really bounce back in these last couple games of the season. He went through that UT Martin game after that fumble against Vanderbilt. I don't think, feeling a lot of confidence. He had a big touchdown run there. Followed it up the next week with a good game against Louisville. And then really should have had
a buck 50.
Well, yeah, 11 carries for a buck, you know, a buck 40, buck 30.
Yeah.
Instead, I think he had 10 for 69. Nice.
Nice. Real nice.
But, yeah, I think it was right good here. To see him.
Yeah, he finished back. With, 10 for 69. Man, great memory. And you would have tagged on like 65 to that.
Right.
In a touchdown. But, yeah. Happy for A.J. Rose. I know going into the game, there was a lot of, like, you know, his name isn't in the transfer portal, but a lot of people kind of expected it, you know.
Just judging from social media, it doesn't seem like he's a guy that's looking to leave.
Right.
Some of the tweets I've seen from him after the game.
So, you know, and I think going into it, that was maybe not the case. So,
and with Terry next year, he's going to be more... I guess weaponized would be the word because of how he can catch the ball out of the backfield. We saw earlier in the season, they were throwing to him a lot, and that totally went out the window whenever Bolden took over.
Yeah, those touch passes are hard to throw.
Right.
But I was excited for Rose in that nobody – Rose and Cash, those two guys who are – you know, they're in their fourth year. They're senior. I mean, Rose is a redshirt, but Cash is a senior. And those guys – the last month or so of the season, if I was, you know, cussing under my breath in the press box, it was usually at those two guys. They still had a couple moments in this game. Mm-hmm. Like, you had, like, that's why I want to, you got to tip your cap to Fuente. He knew when to catch, he caught Kentucky in their base a couple times when they were big. They had Cash in, and they just were hitting the edges, and it was like, hell will you do, you know?
But even Cash, he got out on the perimeter one time and made a tackle in space.
It was a hell of a tackle. That was
That's
a great
what
we've
play. Been waiting on all year. But yeah, both those guys had moments this year, like individual moments where they kind of got exposed a little bit.
And Rose, he does that thing where he just hits like three guys blocking. It's like, dude, you got to cut off of them. You can't just like sit behind
the Rose run against Florida, fourth and short. The fumble return for touchdown against Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
Cash where he runs into the dirt when he had a sack against Arkansas. And then just some other missed tackles he had. He had a third down missed tackle against Louisville where it would have been, I think, a three and out in Louisville. I think it was their first drive when they go down and score. So they've had both had individual moments where they've kind of come up short. But in that game, outside of Bolden, there's an argument to be made that they were the second and third best players for Kentucky. Yeah.
And then if I were going to go in order after that, I was pumped. Calvin Taylor got another sack. Now,
caused by Boogie.
That was... Well, and Virginia Tech, they only needed, 20 more yards to score?
Yeah, I was getting close.
I mean, that kicker, they had a hell of a kicker.
Mm-hmm.
I respect kickers so much more in the last, 3 years, especially watching.
And the ones he kicked, I mean, they were no doubters.
Yeah.
They weren't even close to being off.
Damn it, he finished one sack behind Jonathan Grenard.
Mm-hmm.
Calvin did. 8.5 on the year. But I was happy to see him get one, which Calvin's just, one of my favorite players because he's a guy that I would – interview when he was just like, I was like, dude, this guy's like a 6'9 defensive tackle. What the hell? I got to talk to him. I got to figure this guy out. And he's just like one of the greatest dudes. He talks trash too. After the game, he was like, you know, they're the ones doing a lot of talking. You really want to talk to us?
Right.
I just, Vince Marrow too with the, they weren't doing a lot of talking after the game.
He loves it, man. He loves it.
Oh, man. But, big games for a lot of guys.
And one thing,
kind of way out.
I think that game solidified that from a national media's perspective, Lynn Bowden's the most popular football player Kentucky's had since Lorenzen. Like they've never, Kentucky has never really had a. They talked about Benny and Josh, but not in this light.
Yeah, this is. Now I know a lot of people probably don't follow the same kind of circles we will, but Lynn Bowden won the People's Heisman,
right?
Which, if you all don't follow SB Nation national stuff, they're probably the most popular college football internet outlet, probably the most college football outlet. Period. Banner Society. I know, obviously, you've got SEC Network and stuff like that, where they're going to profile them and stuff. You know, we had Benny Snell features, where he's got the mouthpiece, and we had Josh Allen stuff. But Lynn Bowden, the absurdity of him being shirtless and punching a dude in the face, and then running 300, getting 300 yards and three touchdowns right down Bud Foster's throat. Like
leading the SEC in rushing in 8 games.
He was only... How far was he from the single-season record? He was close to Kentucky's single-season record.
Mo Williams has a record. I think he's at like 1,700.
And Benny, so, I think, had 14.
Yeah.
Or, excuse me.
His junior year.
Lynn Bowden had like 14.
Lynn Bowden ended up in 13-something. 13. We can look it up here in a second. I'm
still
pulling it up right now.
Leading the team in receiving yards.
I'm pulling it up right now. Yeah, that's crazy.
After not playing.
Okay, here are the records. Mo Williams, 1,600 yards in 1995. Number two is Lynn Bowden Jr., 1,468 yards in 2019. So, you're pretty much, if they go to him, if the bye hits a week earlier, you know what I'm saying, and he gets one more game under his belt, he more than likely leads the team in rushing. If he doesn't have to play the best run defense in college football, Georgia,
mm-hmm.
he most likely, you know, that has a single season record. That's what kind of year he had. An unbelievable run. We've never seen an 8-game run like that. And I just hope people that saw it, I think everybody enjoyed it at the end, but I just hope you enjoyed the entire run and how good that was.
And then
four straight games. Now, we know about the defensive streak, the 30-point streak, but now the offense has a 4-game, 30-plus point streak.
Ooh. I was really happy they held him to
Vanderbilt, UT Martin, Louisville, Virginia Tech.
Really happy they held him to at 30.
30, yes.
You got to keep that streak alive.
Right, yes.
And I was going to give TJ hell because he was just talking about how much he loved that streak. It was like his new 3-point streak. It's like, dude, TJ, shut the hell up. Like, classic KRC curse. Yeah, and we're going to have much more time to talk about the season that was and kind of previewing next year. But we do got to clean up some stuff that just happened in the last week. Because in all reality, that week since, like, where did December and, like, for the last 5 weeks, just pew, pew, pew.
It flies by, man. The whole football season just goes by so fast.
I didn't like thinking about, like, football going away. Because we had a great wild card weekend, too, man.
It
the
wild like,
card
yes,
weekend
we
was
did.
Great to, like... You know, kind of new.
It feels like just yesterday I was on this first episode saying Joe Burrow is just a gritty quarterback, and that's all I think he can be. Now he threw 88 touchdown passes and won the Heisman.
So here's a when it comes to dudes like Joe Burrow and Tua, who wisely said he's going to enter the draft, you talk about like, are we ever going to see a season like this again? Like we've got to see more, right? Like they keep like one-upping.
If you look at all the best numbers quarterbacks have had, they've all happened within the last decade and a half.
Yeah, so like I don't see it slowing down anytime soon. Like, is the Big 12 going to finally figure out how to play defense? No. Like, you know, like it's not just going to all of a sudden happen.
Well, I think college football, the rosters are getting more top-heavy at some of these big schools. Look at Clemson's recruiting class this year. It's just absurd.
It's like 5 stars.
They've got the number one player at like 4 different positions.
Yeah. Stupid.
And so,
you think like at what point is Clemson just like, do you want some of our players, guys? Like, come on, ACC. Like, it's the first.
This is a streak I'm interested to watch develop. Like, Clemson's going to lose a game eventually. I think they're at 29 straight wins.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to look out. What is the biggest conference winning streak? Because Clemson is at like
this could be some UCLA stuff.
Right.
You know, like one of those, like the UK home winning record, uh-huh. that can rup where it's like 12 years without a loss.
Like they could destroy that whatever that conference winning streak is, because who's beating them in that league? Man, like something catastrophic would have to happen. And now they have a backup for Trevor Lawrence next year because they got the top quarterback. DJ Ugalele or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks he's skinny Jamarcus Russell. He can throw it about 85 yards.
I'm trying to rattle my brain. Like, the Virginia Tech team, that was a pretty good team. They're going to be pretty solid next year. Now
they're not in their division.
Right, no. So, like, I could see them being the top of the next year, though. Because Hooker is good, and...
Yeah, they'll be a preseason top 25 team, Virginia Tech.
I'm trying to think of, like, who else could even be, like, up in that pecking order. Because Scott and his Tots, they got a long way to go, but they're going to win some games.
If Mac Brown keeps recruiting, and they got Sam Howell, they can make a run these next couple years.
Yeah, but you're right. Like, what...
That's what I'm getting. Florida State, Mike Norvell, and Miami, Manny Diaz. Those are the only two that are within their stratosphere on the recruiting side.
Manny Diaz.
But we saw how...
Did he hire an offensive coordinator?
Brett Lashley. The SMU offensive coordinator. He used to be Gus Malzahn's offensive coordinator.
Okay.
I like that hire. And then Florida State, I like Mike Norvell. I think eventually he will do well there.
He's recruiting well for what, so far. I mean, he's getting the bump.
We're gonna. I want to see a full class. What he can do in a full cycle. Right. Whatever he puts together right now is just a hodgepodge bunch. It's what you can do in a full. But that's what I'm getting at. Like in that ACC. It's hard to see somebody beating them. Scott Stotts ain't doing it.
No, not anytime soon. Now, they did beat Mississippi State, which, folks, I don't know if y'all understand how much Adam Luckett and I are looking forward to discussing the fallout from the Egg Bowl. It's still here. The Egg Bowl fallout's still here.
Do we realize what Elijah Moore's fake dog piss, the chain of events that this thing set off?
God.
Matt Luke was not getting fired until that guy hiked up his leg.
Well, and Joe Moorhead was going to get fired if he, like, but they won that game, so like, oh, I guess we got to keep him around.
So that brought Lane Kiffin back in the SEC. We've already got Lane Kiffin doing Lane Kiffin things.
Oh God, he got DJ Durkin.
Yeah, DJ Durkin. For those that don't know, he's head coach at Maryland, former defense coordinator for Muschamp at Florida.
He was the one who got fired because the player died, and they had
the investigation, and they didn't do what they were supposed to do. Yeah. Long story short,
yeah, they were doing some hardcore, it was some dumbass hardo football. Like I'm just a badass, do as I say.
So you got Lane Kiffin doing Lane Kiffin things. After the Mississippi State game, Joe Moorhead gets up there, says, "This is my program. They're gonna have to drag my Yankee ass out of here."
While they're moving the Egg Bowl trophy closer to them, so it's in the frame.
And then, so I think what that Kiffin, you know, they fire Luke, who's now Georgia's offensive line coach. They hire Kiffin. That immediately puts pressure on Moorhead.
Immediately. And then what does he immediately do?
So what they do, they go, during bowl prep, they open it one versus ones. That's what they were doing in bowl prep. They were going one-on-ones and beating the shit out of each other.
Of course. Well, that's a Mississippi State kind of
and football. So
we're just one-on-ones. We're gonna beat each other up.
Bo Bound said this on Feinbaum, who's kind of like the Mississippi guy.
Uh-huh.
He said that, like, he kind of insinuated that the coaches wanted some roughhousing, like, after the whistle. They wanted, you know, to play with an edge or whatnot.
Yeah.
So there was no one really there to stop it when it got bad, I guess. So his best defensive player, Willie Gay Jr., who had the picks against Kentucky.
It was Willie Gay Jr.? Mm-hmm. See, I never knew that the player's name came out. Willie Gay Jr. was one of those suspended guys.
Right.
Really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he just announced he's going to the NFL. He'll get drafted.
He also got kicked out of the game that they brought him back to play in for, was it two unsportsmanlike likes?
Yeah, one of the games he did. I think it was against Auburn.
And he got kicked out of the Kentucky game, too.
Yeah, that's right. Was it target? Yeah, it was two unsportsmanlike likes because he threw the ball or spiked it after his touchdown, and then there was offsetting, with him and Stenberg. Yeah, he got thrown out of that game. I forgot about that. Well, anyway, he punches Garrett Schrader and breaks his orbital bone. So then you have that happen, and then the Music City Bowl happens. They really get their ass kicked by Louisville.
Yeah, and Tommy Stevens, dude, is just...
And I brought up...
So bad.
I brought up Keaton Thompson in one of my tweets, and Mississippi State fans dove all into my mentions, talking about, I don't understand why he's not playing.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Fire him.
Seriously.
Average Joe.
Oh, Average Joe. That's a good nickname. Now, so Joe Moorhead ultimately, how many days after? It wasn't short. It wasn't very long after the game.
The day after the game, it was leaked out that, you know, he might not survive.
And then
it was the day after that he got fired.
Yeah. So it happened pretty quickly.
I think it was New Year's Day.
Because Feldman had
New
a
Year's
tweet
Day.
At night, and he was fired the next morning.
Right.
And it's like, oh, wow, they weren't messing around. And essentially, I saw somebody put it. They've been fired. Mississippi schools will figure it out when they quit hiring and firing football coaches based on the Egg Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That Egg Bowl it's the golden goose. Like, they've been chasing it forever. And it had John Cohen and gave him some cloudy judgment. But I think that just whole Joe Moorhead is the most – it's such a weird situation because historically, he's great. Like, compared to other Mississippi State coaches. He beat Ole Miss twice.
Oh, yeah.
He was with eight or nine wins last year.
8-4 regular season.
And four.
Eight and five.
And I think
they lost to the Outback Bowl to Iowa. We're upset.
Yeah, and then they go 6-6 this year. So he was 500, I think, overall.
He was 14-13.
Okay.
14-12.
Now, the problem with Moorhead, he's a Yankee ass. And that was going to be hard to overcome. Now, he did have, like, if you're going to get a Yankee, you got to get somebody from Pittsburgh. So, it was, you know, he's a Yinzer.
Well, he is from Pittsburgh.
That's what I mean. Like, he's at least like a Yinzer. Right. So, it was like, all right, we'll try this guy out. So, he had that going against him. But it was the sins of the father that he was judged by. Because Dan Mullen.
Best coach they've ever had. The biggest issue with Moorhead, and we had a lot of hot takes out there after he got fired about that. About he's the best, like, how can Mississippi State,
right,
with
right.
their history, fire him? But Dan Mullen left behind the best defense in the country. With that defensive line, those safeties, those linebackers, there were pros all over that defense. There was
Jeffrey
three first
Sippins,
round picks.
Montez
three first
Sweat,
round picks.
Who is
Jonathan Abram?
Yeah. For the Raiders, Hard Knocks.
Right.
They were studs, and then you had Nick Fitzgerald. On offense.
Then you had, not only that, a really good offensive line who they had. He plays for the Packers now. His name, I'm drawing blanks on his name. Elkton Jenkins was their center last year. He's one of the Packers' best offensive linemen. Then this year, Darrell Williams and Tyree Phillips. I think both of those guys are going to the Senior Bowl. So right there, that's three good offensive linemen they had. And then you add in Kylin Hill, who should have led the SEC in rushing this year until he got hurt against Louisville. So you had all these pieces on offense and that defense that gave up less than 10 points a game. He gave up less than 10 points a game, this offensive guru, and they somehow found a way to lose five games that first year. So that automatically, and then losing to Mullen, who had an inferior roster at home, and you're only scoring 6 points.
That's tough.
And then Fitzgerald looking bad, a senior quarterback who's played, you know, had probably had 40 starts under his belt.
Moorhead did not, like, he could have propped Nick Fitzgerald up better. And the thing is,
well, he was stubborn wanting to run his offense when he had a power spread attack, and that's really what they should have leaned in on, and they didn't.
Yeah, and what I heard about Fitzgerald going in, too, is that, like, Mullen worked wonders with him by making things easy on him. Between the years, not the guy that's going to go up to the line of scrimmage and make all these calls and do all this kind of thing.
Right.
Just kind of keep it simple for him. Moorhead didn't do that. But on the other hand, it's like, are you going to do better with this next guy? Because that's usually why I'm a bigger proponent.
I don't think,
like,
it mattered, because that was always going to be a tough spot for anybody. And you kind of need to unify people, and I think the only real reason to do that is fire Moorhead, because he was walking into a lame duck year three.
Counter, you just don't wait and get in the coaching search when you should be getting in the coaching search. That's where they really messed up.
Absolutely.
Because the Egg Bowl.
They shouldn't let
it all goes back to that damn Egg Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're sitting at a spot where Egg Bowl 2020. Egg Bowl 2020.
Thanksgiving night.
It could be like Blade Runner 2049 or whatever, except just on.
And both teams 4-7.
And Lane Kiffin versus Todd Grantham.
Mm-hmm.
I want that so bad because I can just picture Grantham's red face. Like, both of them very cherubic throughout the game. Just red face, sweating, screaming, and Grantham just blitzing, like, nonstop. Just like, you know what, give me liberty or give me death, damn it. We're blitzing until Kiffin's ears falls off. Like, oh, they got a big play. I don't care. We're going to blitz some more.
And then Grantham flicking him off.
God, I want it so, bad.
I know. I want it too.
Because, so.
For eternity. Just give me, that's my Egg Bowl.
And
really, I just want SEC media day one to have Lane Kiffin, Ty Grantham, and Sam Pittman.
Oh, man.
And to have Bob Holt drill them all.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. You just have like them like sitting at a table and Bob Holt just
and
like.
And then little Eli Drinkowitz over there having to come up last.
What a dork. Oh, he's definitely going last. There's no doubt in my mind. He is up last next year at SEC Media Days. But so TJ Walker, who I do radio with every day, Kentucky Roll Call, 7 to 9, Big X Sports Radio. He was like, oh, man, Grantham, that'd be a good hire for them. I was like, what?
It all depends on staff.
Right, because he...
Like, what is... Like, what... He seems like a guy that was a lifer coordinator. So, like, because, what kind of offensive coordinator can he get?
I think especially because of his personality.
Right.
Like, he... Him and Bobby notoriously hate each other. Now, it's easy to understand why people hate Bobby Petrino. But, like, going back to Georgia with Kirby Smart, who's, by all accounts, a nice guy, there's friction there. I mean, that's where we got Thurden Grantham, too. Fans absolutely hated him because he would, you know.
Mark Richt, yeah. He was with Richt.
Who did I say? I said Kirby.
You meant Richt. Nice guy.
Yeah. I was picked, you know, names. Yeah. Got a little going a little too fast there. But I just can't see this dude as a head coach. And that's why I want
to. I know.
Just like Sam Pittman. He's a head coach.
But, like, yeah, exactly. But Pittman is putting together a damn strong staff. Yeah. Or he has put together a really strong staff. With Grantham, it's going to be the same thing. Like, what kind of staff can he put together?
And
if that's the guy, we don't know it. We could get out of here and they hired Skip Holtz.
Which, but we haven't heard of names that like would make sense. The one that terrified me the most was Jeff Monken. I did not want him at Mississippi State running the triple option.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was modified triple option, I don't want that. Like, that is just. Mark the trip to Starkville as an L.
Mm-hmm.
You get Todd Grantham in there, it's Wild Wild West. You know, who knows what you're going to get when you go.
You know my role in the SEC rule book.
Yeah, that it's a
unwritten rule.
No triple option. I get it, but man, Monken made sense. The dude at Louisiana made sense.
There, Sark is another option I've seen floated out there.
Oh man, that'd be fun.
Could you Steve Sarkisian versus Lane Kiffin in the Egg Bowl?
Just the
two Southern California boys down in the deep south.
I love that one of their guys who was like a head candidate. It's like, yeah, I could go back to my alma mater or I could coach the New York Giants. Yeah, I'm going to go to New York City.
Yeah, he leveraged the hell out of that. For sure.
Which, how many times has there ever been like those are your options or New York Giants or Mississippi State? And that's.
Yeah, you feel for. Because they can't catch a break, it seems like, here lately.
Oh, man. I'd love for it to be.
Since that guy pissed, dog pissed, they haven't been able to catch a break.
Dog, the PAT.
Lane Kiffin.
Gosh.
Your will linebacker punches your quarterback in the face. You lose in embarrassing fashion in the Music City Bowl. You fire your coach. Oh. And publicly, their top two candidates, it looks like, Billy Napier.
Turn you down
publicly. Turn it down publicly. And then Joe Judge pretty much says,
sorry, alma mater.
Deuces, I'm going to the New York Football Giants.
Tough
times in Starkville.
Tough sledding for the folks in Starkville. But to move on, you mentioned the bang-up job Sam Pittman's doing compiling his staff. Poaches Derek LeBlanc from Kentucky staff. And LeBlanc should be commended for being a heck of a ball coach at Kentucky. He did a great job with Kentucky's defensive line in the, is it 2 years he was here?
Three. 2017, 18, 19.
Did a great job developing guys like Calvin Taylor, TJ Carter, Quentin Bohanna. Sucks to see him go. I don't know what the motives are other than A, he's getting closer to Louisiana, and that, and he hadn't really been able to recruit there since he's been at UK. And this is my guess. We don't know when all the contract stuff coming out, but I think he was due for a raise.
It was set to expire, his contract.
So he was going to have to get a big raise, and I don't think Stoops had the money to pay him. I think the money had to go to Brad White.
Maybe.
Probably $80,000. So that's my guess. I don't know that for a fact. But he, and I'm sure he's probably going to get paid somewhere around $450,000 instead of $250,000. He was the lowest paid person on UK staff.
Yeah.
Which kind of surprised me, but he's been there a while. And
but, I mean, he came from North Texas. Really, when I look at it, that's the biggest thing for me. What, he doesn't have any connections to Pittman or their new D coordinator, Barry Odom. From what I can tell, he's never worked with any of them. Now, their offensive line coach, whose name is escaping me right now, I think it's Brad Davis, maybe. He and LeBlanc worked at North Texas together.
Okay.
And then that guy went to, I believe, Florida, Missouri before landing in Arkansas. So there's that connection. Of course, offensive line and defensive line coach are working together.
Right.
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, that, I mean, I was surprised by that. I'm surprised that happened. And now you look at Kentucky, that's three big, you know, defensive coaches that have left since the end of last season. You had Matt House going to the Chiefs, and you had, you know, that we all forget about that contract negotiation stuff that went on with Kentucky and the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Then Dean Hood left for a head coaching job, FCS head coaching job, and now LeBlanc leaves for what seems like a lateral move or maybe even a step back because he's going to a rebuilding program where Kentucky, after reeling a big-time D-line class, has got to kind of got things rolling in the right direction. And when you look at next year's defense, that's, I think, the biggest question mark. I think they have bodies there,
mm-hmm.
but it's having the proven playmakers.
That's how you spin it. You should be able to sell this job to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's just finding the right tactician to be able to instruct these young guys. Because you got some fun tools to play with, mm-hmm. but you just, if you're Mark Stoops, this is a big hire.
And does he go after somebody with some recruiting chops like Summerall, like last year?
See, and I don't think they need it as much as they just need a damn good ball coach mm-hmm. in there. Now, maybe with the Hood position, you might see that, especially because, I mean, hell, Stoops has a lot of options he can do with Hood departing because he could. I mean,
oh, yeah, that's like the swing position of the staff, that extra.
That was assistant. The 10th guy because right. White was initially the 10th guy, but he moves up. So they had Hood working with safeties and special teams. So, like, I mean, obviously, the special teams work well. Do they promote Matt Sakis, or do they just say, hey, keep making sure our punters are punting well? There's a lot they can do with that. On defensive line, I know Anwar Stewart is a name thrown around.
He's at App State. He used to play for UK.
He played for UK. He came back, got his degree, was a GA for 2 or 3 years up until this season. This was his first season not at UK. So he was on the Citrus Bowl staff as a GA working with the D-line.
And that App State defensive line played really well this year in his first season.
I think also it's an easy name to drop as a candidate because, folks, let's be honest here. If you're going to act like you have a list of candidates for a defensive line position, like, come on. Like,
if anybody would have one, it'd be me.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I can't find
like
one.
It's
hard for me to.
It's tough.
And how Stoops does he searches, they're pretty damn closed door.
Yeah.
We're not really going to know. Now, we'll say this. Pete Jenkins was a longtime LSU assistant. Like, it's like Ed Orgeron's, like, closest buddy.
Who LeBlanc served for. Like, he was a Pete Jenkins guy.
Long story short, he's like the technician, 3-4 technician master that Stoops and staff, they like to use a lot of his techniques, what he does.
Defensive line whisperer.
So Brumbaugh and LeBlanc were both kind of off his coaching tree, I guess you say. So that's a place to look. It's finding somebody that is, I guess, a member of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be an LSU, like, off the field staffer down there.
Yeah.
I could see that happening.
Role. Yeah.
Right. So,
we'll just
know.
Have to stay tuned.
Like, Hood, what are they going to do with that? Do they need another second? I mean, they've got Stoops and Klingscale. Do they need another secondary coach?
Ed Reed?
Ed Reed. Yeah, the message board favorite, Ed Reed.
Yeah.
No, so, I do not think Ed Reed will come, but
we'll
see.
Yeah, that's one where I think you do go get you do try to find.
Is some there an old chops. Is there an old dog from one of Bob Stoops' old staff that maybe Stoops wants to bring in?
Yeah,
or Mark Stoops or Mike Stoops' old staff at Arizona. I mean, we'll see.
We'll see. I'm trying to think because we're getting a little long here.
Special teams. I will say this, but now I say it. It's the guy that just got fired from UKU, but Mueller just hired him. Mark Elder,
Mark Elder.
He was a special teams guy for Butch Jones at Cincinnati and Tennessee. But
the I Elder guess that's that off, works for Mueller. No,
yeah,
no.
I guess that's off the table.
Yeah, it's off the table now. Hey, you don't know. Okay, a few other talking points that we haven't got to since we've been out. Guys coming back. Limbo, the only departer. I think Boogie, he hasn't said anything, but I don't think he's going to. At this point,
technically, it's 9 starters on offense, 7 starters on defense.
Quentin Bohanna announced he's returning, mm-hmm. going to play nose guard. I think he could have played his way into like a top 3 round this year, but he was dealing with injury kind of stuff. That's big because you don't have to rely entirely on bullet.
It's like a weird position for the draft, too.
Yeah, yeah. So that's set, and you've got 4 of your 5 on offensive line returning. That's the 5th in the country, according to Pro Football Focus.
All of your receivers outside Bolden, all of your running backs. Get Wagner, Terry Wilson Wagner's back in line. Oh, yeah, Wagner, too. Yeah. But other than that.
Which I'm going to be interested to see his draft stock. That's something for talking down the road. Because somebody
could take a flyer on him in the 6th, 7th round.
Somebody's going to fall in love with him, and they're not going to want to be in the free agent.
It could be pool. The Georgia Safo J pick where we weren't expecting it last year, and then randomly in the 7th round, he comes off the board.
They don't want it. Somebody used a compensatory pick. They don't want to, like, fight anybody in free agency. Right. They just want to lock it up.
Right.
Because, like, I mean, you'll just randomly hear, oh, well, he played basketball, and now he's in the NFL. Like, dudes are good athletes. It takes them a little bit longer to click. And, hell, half of his senior season, when, like, right when he was starting to figure things out, got cut short because the quarterback got
That's
hurt.
The one thing for this season I think that sucked the most was that we didn't really get to see Wagner keep developing because he was on a kind of a meteoric rise there for a little bit.
Yeah, and I wrote a whole thing about how I think Bowden's draft stock is going to go. I just don't see him as the he's going to rise because of a coach liking what they can do with him, not because of what he's going to do in the test and all.
Absolutely.
That. Yeah, he's not a.
He didn't even need to do any of that. No. They just got to watch his tape.
You think he won't do pro day? You think he'll do the NFL combine?
Yeah, he'll do the combine. He'll run.
Yeah, but still, he's not going to be like, oh my gosh, 4.37. He's not a.
No, I mean he's gonna be in the 4.6s.
Yeah, it's not gonna be good. Kind of like when they were like, more like Benny Snell.
If he hits 4.59, 4.58, that'd be a hell of a time, I think.
Yeah, because he's all about acceleration, agility, and running dudes over. Because he's bigger too.
Now
than
a short
Marshall
shuttle
Sauce.
Drill could be pretty good.
He's got to be good at that in the L drill.
Yeah,
the 3-cone. But I think he's gonna be like some, you know. Kyle Shanahan. I don't think they got Debo, so I don't think he would.
Bolden's what they call a gadget player.
Yeah.
So like Debo, Tavon Austin for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Mecole Hardman for the Chiefs.
I can see Cardinals taking a flyer on him.
Where he's gonna
Cliff
yes,
Kingsbury yes. like that. That seems like a good fit.
He's gonna be a punt returner and a guy they can put in the backfield. As a running back, line up at receiver. Bring him in motion on jet and fly sweeps.
A lot of those
of
little toss
stuff
kind of forward stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know, you're randomly wildcat every once in a while and like, oh, he's going to throw it or no, quarterback drop.
Double pass.
Yeah, yeah. Julian like Edelman kind of stuff. Yeah, so. Ooh, maybe Patriots? They need receivers.
They do need receivers.
They need receivers bad.
Bad.
How much fun were those games this weekend?
That's the most exciting I ever remember the wild card round being.
Good games. Just all of them. I mean, hell, even the Eagles with Josh McCown had a chance to tie the game.
Yeah, they were in it till the end.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. This weekend, I don't think they're going to be as good a game. So, like, I think it's tight.
We'll see, man, because, like, some of these, like, the 49ers, they've got a young roster. Like, this is going to be the biggest game. On paper, they should handle the Vikings, but. You just don't know. I think these playoffs has a recipe of maybe like a 6 seed going on a run or having like kind of a random Super Bowl champion because it's kind of wide open.
Yeah. I tend to believe that it'll... Like one of the... Like Rodgers is the salty dog that's going to weather this. Where you got Breeze and Brady going out early. I got a feeling Rodgers will salt it out, which is good for our boy Big Z. I think he's...
Yeah, he's been balling. He's just probably the best player on that... Or one of the best players on that team this year.
Yeah, him and Preston Smith and Aaron Rodgers. Like, if Rodgers just had, like, one more reliable target, I would be like, yeah, I think the Packers. Like,
yeah. That running back is pretty good, Aaron Jones.
Yeah. Oh, he's been great as of late. So it's going to be another exciting weekend of football, and it gets capped off Monday with the national championship. And I don't know about you, Adam Luckett, but I want Joe Burrow to. I want to be close at halftime, just. But then it's going to be getting late, and I want Joe Burrow to throw for 7 touchdowns.
Just take over New Orleans.
Yeah, I mean,
hard for me to see them losing in New Orleans.
It's going to be 85% LSU fans. Like Clemson, the only way Clemson got in is if they bought tickets before the game against Ohio State.
Yeah, Clemson, they beat Ohio State because of the guys wearing the headsets, most notably Brent Venables. So in this game, it's going to come down to, and it's not his game plan going in, it's kind of his adjustments as he moves on.
Mm-hmm.
Can he get the best of Golden Boy Joe Brady and Joe Burrow? I think that's the matchup to watch for, because Trevor Lawrence is going to put up points against LSU's defense. It's going to be, can they slow down that monster passing attack that LSU has?
I'm surprised that we didn't. Like, I heard a little bit of Joe Brady scuttlebutt going elsewhere. I
heard NFL coordinator buzz if somebody hired the Ravens defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
I don't think so. Is there any vacancies?
Browns are the only one open right now.
And they're going to screw it up.
They're interviewing everybody.
Yeah. Idiots. Just a bunch of idiots. That's what happens. Jimmy Haslam, connections to the Browns and the Vols. Huh. See any commonalities there?
I do know Tennessee is the blue blood of GIFs, funny GIFs.
God. That just
from backwards hat guy to screaming beard.
The backwards
to
koozie
hat Santa.
The backwards hat guy had the disappointed girl behind him too, who like knew she was like, "Oh God."
That was perfect.
Man, those that game was more entertaining for just crowd shot purposes because it was ugly as hell.
You had Tennessee pissing down their leg, and then Indiana just hoosiered it in the fourth quarter. I've seen Indiana lose that game probably 18 times in my life.
God, that was hilarious.
And then they had chance. Tennessee was down 13 with 5 minutes left. Indiana had the ball twice with a chance to win it in the end.
Twice.
That's how crazy that was.
And then, of course, Jeremy Pruitt just hates his quarterback so much. He's just he's just running in two different dudes at Wildcat. They got Ty Chandler in and
Eric Gray.
Yeah, I mean, just
put Mar in.
Garantano, I guess he just like gets superpowers when he plays Kentucky. What? Yeah,
look at that way, man.
So that's annoying.
He got hot there for 2 games at Kentucky, at South Carolina, Kentucky, Missouri. He had a little 3-game run there where he's pretty good. But other than that, he's just been blah. I guess if Flacco can get hot and win a Super Bowl, I guess any quarterback can have their day and get hot and make a run.
Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't extend over to next year.
No, it won't. Tennessee sucks. That was hilarious. And also, Tennessee Twitter, the worst. Still the worst human beings in the world. Lynn Bowden, still the best. The best bowl.
Did you see Spurrier before the game?
Yeah. He's in the Gator Bowl Hall of Fame or whatever.
Yeah. That was good. Then the Gator Chomp for all those Tennessee fans. And then Damian Harris. Are we buying his...
What is it?
It's... I was going to the podium and everybody thought I was going to Kentucky.
I even told my mom I was going to Kentucky.
And then I just felt... Okay, I saw you cheering. I'm going to say this now because Damian Harris is a grown-ass man now.
Yeah, he's a grown-ass man, so we can say this now. We couldn't say it back then.
Like, 2 weeks before, you're over there cheering because whoever picked Alabama, I think it was maybe Calvin Ridley or just whoever. With Blake Barnett, you are over there, chopping it up. So you think we're supposed to believe that?
Do you know why I was at his commitment ceremony? Because we needed somebody from KSR to go. Right. If we thought he was going to go to Alabama, then Matt and Drew and the whole crew would have been there. They did a radio show from there, for Christ's sake.
Right.
But they sent me because everybody knew and the brother that he was going to Alabama.
I'm not buying that. Damon, he was in the recruiting process. As soon as Bama put on the full court press, he was going there.
It's a fun, like, okay, so I get, like, you want to tell a good story, But, like, I feel like you're going out of your way for no reason to, like...
still string Kentucky along?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what?
Just let it go, man.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someone can tell me I'm wrong, but I'm not.
I don't think anybody's telling you wrong besides Damian Harris.
Right.
Yeah. But I will tell everybody listening that we're going to come back next week. We ain't going nowhere, folks. There's going to be football to talk about. Now, I don't know how regular it's going to be. I'm just warning everybody because I got a kid coming here in, I don't know, 3-2 months. We're getting down the stretch. So between that and, you know, we'll
see. Roush is running in the last trimester.
Yeah.
Now things get real.
Yeah. Oh, it's getting really real. Like, she's not wearing regular clothes at all anymore. Like, there was some time where it was like, oh, well, you know, she can wear my sweatpants. That's not happening anymore. So it's getting real, but, you know, we'll figure it all out. But for the most part, for your football needs, Luckett and I will be holding down weekly throughout the offseason, getting together the football minds for the KSR football podcast. That'll be more irregular, but we'll still make that happen from time to time. So just to kind of give you a heads up on kind of where things stand in the offseason. But football's year round.
We've only just begun.
Yeah.
365-day-a-year sport.
Man. Gonna miss, actually.
And I think for you, all you listeners, we may have to use you all to help us create some content. Maybe.
Yeah.
If you would like a Q&A, maybe let us know.
Ooh.
We could try that out.
Or, you know, we do like a football movie tournament or something like that. Yeah. You know, yeah, there's a lot of fun kind of things we can figure out.
We could do 2019 plays. Do kind of a bracket like that. For Kentucky plays.
The hard part is finding some of those on the internet. Like the good ones that are like under the radar.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, no, we
can find a way to do it.
We're going to find some content. You mark our words. We're going to find plenty of content. But in the meantime, hold tight. We're doing a football podcast this week as well. Doing a lot of stuff. Enjoy this weekend of football. It's the last weekend. You're going to have 5 football games.
Got the FCS championship Saturday at noon.
So 6 football games between NFL divisional round and college football playoff. So enjoy it while you can, folks, because
you'll be jonesing for this in 4 months.
Yeah, it's going to be brutal. It's going to be brutal. But it's been fun talking to everybody today. We'll be back again next week. For Adam Luckett, I'm Nick Roush. Go Cats. Go Cougars.